Hi, I'm Chris Carter, creator of The X-Files, and you're listening to The X-Cast.
Welcome back, everybody, to The X-Cast. The truth is in here. Today, we are looking at the second episode of The X-Files, which is Deep Throat, which follows up from the pilot episode. I'm Tony Black, your host, and I'm happy to say I'm joined today, for the first time, by another British devoted X-Files fan, Mr. Andrew Brooker.
Hello.
How are you doing? You all right?
I am good. Thank you for having me on.
It's an absolute pleasure. Yeah, it's... It's really nice to chat to another British ex-filly, however you say it. I never quite knew how you'd say that.
I always want to say ex-file, because that's how it looks, but
yeah,
it doesn't sound quite right in conversation, does it?
No, it doesn't. It doesn't. So we'll go with ex-file for ease. Before we get into Deep Throat, I'm going to start by doing as I always do now with new guests who come on the show and ask you, Andrew, the what I'm calling the five questions of X, or the five questions in the key of X, maybe, I'll say. This is just to get a little flavour of your interest in The X-Files and, you know, what you love and things like that. So, first question, when did you discover The X-Files?
So, I mean, when did The X-Files air over here? So, 94, end of 94, beginning of 95?
Basically, yeah, I think so.
Yeah. So, the thing was, I wasn't really able to watch it on the telly. And then when it came out over here, I was like 12.
Right.
My parents didn't want me watching it. I didn't get anywhere near it for a couple of years. But what I did do was I used to buy a lot of films on VHS.
Okay.
Tripped across the advert for, do you remember when they were releasing all the individual episodes on VHS?
Yes, yeah, I do, yeah.
So you had the two-part, or the first one I bought, I think was the second one they released, was Tombs.
Yes, they did. They had both of those on, didn't they? Yeah.
So it ran like a 90-minute episode.
Mm.
But that was the first ever X-Files episode I watched, was that. So that would have been just after season one ended, so probably back into 95.
That's a pretty good entry point to the show, really, isn't it? You know,
it is. It kickstarted a lot of things for me, actually, not just loving the X-Files, which was interesting because I kind of, obviously, you know, you're 12, 13 years old. You don't quite understand what it is you're going to be watching.
Yeah.
And I was like, oh, it's just going to be aliens and shit. And then I watched it and I was like, well, maybe it's not. I don't know what I'm watching now. So it was a really good jumping point. And obviously, a couple of years later, when I... Yeah, I had my own money and I started buying all of them and I sat and watched them from such. I was like, okay, it is aliens and shit. But no, Tombs was probably my first entry. That video collection, Tombs, was my first entry into the X-Files.
Yeah, the whole VHS thing. We talked a little bit about this on Twitter the other day, didn't we? And
yeah,
and we were saying how it was quite strange the way they did it. Obviously, they would do it with mythology episodes and they would put out, you know, things like 731 and Nisei or, you know, that kind of stuff, all the abduction things. But then there was the one where they would have, I think it was Piper Maru, an Apocrypha from season three, but they were mail order.
Which, yes, they were.
I never got that.
it was a bizarre way to release what was really starting to turn into a growing phenomenon of people wanting these collections of just those particular episodes.
Yeah.
To limit it like that, you'd never get away with doing that now, would
no
you?
No chance. No way. Everything's in, you know, box sets or... And obviously, you know, they used to cost like 13, 14 quid for each VHS. Like,
yeah, for one tape.
Yeah, it's crazy. The 90s, the golden 90s. Okay, question two then. What is your favourite episode of The X-Files?
I think I have to kind of cheat with this question.
Okay.
And say my favourite episode isn't actually an episode.
Oh, okay.
I think my favourite episode has to be the first film.
Yeah, you can get away with that, I suppose, because, you know, because it's part of the show. So
yeah, I think the thing is, again, it's because when it started, I was quite young. I didn't really get into it. And then I went and watched the film just because I wanted to go and watch the film.
Yeah.
And it genuinely forced me to go, wow, this is, you know, this is a great, great little film.
Mm.
I followed it on, obviously, with the beginning of the next season. Went, well, hold on, this is followed on from the film. Hold on a minute. I best go back and watch everything. Literally, that was my excuse for going back and starting from the beginning and watching everything. So it was a fantastic 2-hour episode, if you like.
Yeah.
A really well put together film and really forced me to get on and watch everything that the X-Files had.
I think the Fight the Future is underrated. definitely. Even within X-Files fandom.
Very much so. Because, and we'll talk about this at some point, but where it sits inside the mythology is a nice little resting point for it as well.
Yeah.
For the whole show, yeah, for the show as a whole, it sits very nicely at a point where it needed to get a kick up the ass to move on.
Definitely, because it was not stagnating in season five at all, because there were some really good episodes in season five, but it did need that extra shove, didn't it, into a new, you know, to answer some questions. I mean, the whole thing with Fight the Future, and obviously, as you say, we'll get into this when we do Fight the Future down the line, but the whole thing was that it promised the truth will be revealed. And yep. Even though that wasn't quite true, it did reveal quite a bit of stuff, or it did at least contextualise quite a lot of the mythology. So then going forward, you understood a lot more, and it was probably one of the reasons they were able to really sort of wrap a lot of it up in season six then. Yeah, so Fight the Future, that's a good one. I think you can certainly claim that's one of your favourites. That's a great one. Next question then, what is your favourite season of the X-Files overall?
I think the season before Fight the Future, so that's season five.
Season five, yeah.
Everything that kind of led up to Fight the Future was starting to tie everything off, and when you got to the end of it, it didn't just feel like a series, like a season finale. It felt like you could actually stop the show there. And once you had the film, you didn't necessarily need to carry on. We're all glad it did.
Yeah.
But, you know, it felt like it was a season to roll everything up into a nice little package, and you could finish there if need be. And it was one of the more heavily populated ones with mythology episodes as well. Because there were a couple, and I think that season three, I think, was like this. So obviously you got like 23, 24 episodes, and three or four mythology episodes. I love the Monster of the Week episodes, they're great. But yeah, Sometimes, especially when you're a bit younger, I was like, no, more alien stuff, more conspiracy stuff, I want to know what's going on.
Yeah, definitely. Mythology was what you always want more. Now you're older, I don't know about you, but now I'm older, I appreciate the monster episodes even more. Than the mythology, because they're most of them are the better ones. But like when you're a kid, you just want the story, the overall story, don't you?
Absolutely. But no, you're right. Obviously, as I've grown up, I've gone, you know, the Monster of the Week episodes have turned out to be some of my favourites.
Mm.
But yeah, I always wanted more conspiracy episodes. And I still, when I start to binge the X-Files, I get to about season five and I go, okay, I'm starting to burn out on this. More importantly, the wife is starting to get annoyed that I've taken up the telly with X-Files for the last 3 weeks. I need to get on and get the story told. So yeah, I think that season probably, if I had to only get halfway through my binge and stop, I'd happily stop there and feel like I'd watched a good show.
Yeah, I think there's something to that, definitely, because the final episode of season five is called The End. I mean,
absolutely.
Yeah, you know, and it's not, obviously, they always knew they were coming back, but the big thing with season five, of course, it's the last season filmed in Vancouver. So yeah, there was a genuine change. And obviously the movie is filmed before they even started season five. They filmed the movie between seasons four and five.
Yes,
so
they did.
So yeah, and it was a really interesting way that they then retrofitted season five to build up to something they'd already got in the bag, which was a really interesting way of doing it. But yeah, so season five does have a sense of completion and closure before the movie then sort of not reboots the series, but gives it another lease of life. And then that's why the last like four seasons are quite often quite different and just go in different directions. So yeah, seasons one to five feel like quite a complete package. So I think that's a good way of looking at it, definitely. Okay, question four then. Who is your favourite character in the X-Files?
I think I steal your answer for this one from your primer the other week. I sat when you said you're going to ask this question, I don't know. And the more I watched it, it has to be the cigarette smoking man. It has to be. He acts like this. He's like a lightning rod for all conspiracy.
Mm.
And I love him. And especially towards the end of the seasons as well, you kind of go, well, he very much acts like this Deus Ex Machina for everything going wrong. He comes in, fixes everything towards it. He's magic, and I love him for that.
Yeah, definitely. Spoilers for the new series. So switch off now for a bit or skip forward. But are you excited that he's coming back in the new series?
I am very much so. I kind of, because I try to avoid most of the trailers and things for it. Because it's the X-Files, I want to go in as unprepared as possible. But it's hard to avoid news like that. And when I heard that he was coming, I was like, you know what, that's spectacular. The X-Files isn't the X-Files without him.
Exactly, yeah.
You can take him and David Duchovny and Gillian Anderson out of it. This just wouldn't be the X-Files. And you can't have just two out of those three.
Yeah, and you know, you could say this similar about Skinner as well. You know, to an extent, that's why season 9 doesn't really feel like the show we love, because only one of those three is there, really.
It doesn't feel... We had this conversation previously, didn't we, about the actual ending of the show. I've watched it once, and I don't like watching it.
Yeah.
I get to that point and go, nope, I'm done.
I know. I only like the last 20 minutes of The Truth, which is when it feels like what the episode should have been. You know, it's just all exciting and Chase and Mulder and Scully out together, and then you see the Smoking Man, and that was what I wanted for like 2 hours of a finale of the show, pretty much. And they, you know, they didn't do that. But yeah, I think the big thing with the Smoking Man, I completely agree with you, and the big thing about it going forward is I don't have absolutely no idea how they can possibly bring him back, and that's what excites me about it.
Well, this is it, isn't it? Absolutely. Someone much, much smarter than me has figured out how to do this.
Yeah.
And now I'm really looking forward to seeing what they do.
I know. I'm going to put money, as much as I love Chris Carter, I'm going to put money on Glenn Morgan and James Wong being the ones who figured this out, because they've had some of the best ideas for the entire show all through it.
Yeah.
I bet they were the guys who went, we know how to bring him back. And they gave him it. Okay, last question. Do you have a favourite moment from The X-Files altogether?
I think I do. And I think I only really got it maybe a couple of years ago. And I'm really chuffed because it's in the episode we're talking about today.
Oh, I wonder if it's the same one as mine.
It's right at the end. It's the last scene.
Oh, yeah. That's a great scene.
That, the quote, the just between Deep Throat and Mulder, just them two talking before he walks off.
Yeah.
You just go, oh, fucking hell. Literally, I get goosebumps every time I watch it.
Absolutely.
It's that moment where you go, this isn't just one dude who might be wrong. This is one dude who's absolutely right, and now I get to spend the next 9 seasons watching him try and prove it.
Yeah, and the great thing about that quote as well is how, even at that point when they didn't really know what the mythology was going to be, it's so true what he says. You know, that they've been here a long, long time, and it's something that becomes more and more clear as the mythology deepens, just how right he is. And
yes,
it's a simple line, but it's really important, isn't it?
It is spectacularly important. I think without that line, I think the rest of the season afterwards just kind of, it wouldn't fall apart. It wouldn't be quite as meaningful, I don't think.
I think you're absolutely right. We'll get into this a bit later, even more, but that's a really good choice. Okay, cool. Well, we've got a really good idea now of your X-Files fandom and what you love. Some really good choices there and things. So let's start as we mean to go on, and let's explore episode 2, or to some extent, the first episode beyond the pilot of The X-Files, Deep Throat. Deep Throat was written by Chris Carter and directed by Daniel Sackheim, and it aired on September the 17th, 1993, and is the first episode back of The X-Files after the production of the pilot, but it is the second episode in season 1. When Mulder and Scully investigate a possible conspiracy in the US Air Force, Mulder meets a mysterious informant who warns him to stay away from the case, but undeterred, Mulder comes closer to the truth than ever before, only to have it snatched away from him. So, Andrew, out of 10, how would you rate Deep Throat?
I don't think you can give it a perfect 10. I don't think you can, but probably 8, 8.5, if I'm allowed to have half scores.
You can have half scores. This is the this is the first time we've rated an episode, so yeah, go for it, yeah.
Fair enough, groundbreaking, and I like it. So yeah, probably 8, 8.5, I think. It's, like I say, it's not perfect, but it does do an awful lot right, and considering it's just after the pilot, like we said earlier, because I like the conspiracy stuff. It's just enough conspiracy to keep you wanting more after having been invested with the pilot.
Absolutely.
But not so much as you go, well, that you're completely talking at your backside for all of this. I don't want, you know, I think it's a perfect, just kind of an add-on, if you like, to the pilot. I think it's a very, very good episode.
I'm going to go one further, and I'm going to say 9 out of 10.
Okay.
Yeah, just a little bit. Mainly because I think that Deep Throat, and obviously we're going to talk more in depth about the episode as we go through, but I think Deep Throat is the episode that establishes what The X-Files is and the kind of characters, you know, the essence of what the show is, basically. And I think that it's the pilot, in a way, for me. Or it's an extension of the pilot. And I think it's a better pilot than the pilot itself.
Yeah.
So I think it kind of just is one of those episodes that just establishes what you need to know going forward. And it's just done. It's just slick. It's just done really well. So I think, yeah, I would give it slightly more than you, but effectively, I think we think the same on this one, really.
Yeah, yeah. It does a very good job in actually outside of the conspiracy in the X-Files giving you a good look at the relationship between Mulder and Scully at the beginning as well, which you don't get much of in the pilot. They're very polar in the pilot, which I think they need to be to make it the pilot.
Mm.
But in this one, you see them kind of bouncing ideas off of each other slightly more and arguing a little bit more with sense, maybe isn't quite the right word, but there's definitely a logic to both arguments.
Yeah.
Instead of just being, no, I'm right and you're wrong. And I quite like that about this episode.
No, I think that's true. I think that's absolutely true. Okay, so the episode begins with the pre-credit sequence. Now, this was actually the first pre-credit sequence of the show, because obviously in the pilot, as we talked about last week, in the pilot, you just have the opening X-Files name, and then the following was inspired by true events. This is the first episode to have a teaser as such, which obviously became the cold open, as we say, which became the one of the staples of the show. And it's quite an action-packed beginning, isn't it, really, for the episode?
Yeah, it does. It does an awful lot for setting the scene up to and including, you know, wart and burn-covered pilot. I will say one of the things that actually drops, and maybe this is why I gave it a slightly lower score, the tactics, let's say, of the SWAT team that go in are laughable. Like, I cringe every time I watch that one little bit. Just, you know, with their mid-90s SWAT tashes.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And just really bad hand action. I know this. A lot of this comes from like spending my entire life watching military films. So you can tell just how awful some of the acting in it is. And you have to forgive it because, again, it's the second episode. There's no budget. No one knows if it's going to be worth investing in any of this. But that scene does make me giggle every time.
I know what you mean. It is of its time, isn't it? And it is a bit like gung-ho. Yeah, go in, quick, yeah. All they've got to do really is walk in the door. You know, it's not like it's a stronghold with like a military commander. It's just a guy who's been burned.
It's one dude and his wife.
Yeah. They treat it
need that many people.
Exactly. They're treating it like they're storming Blofeld's base. You know, it's like really not. But this is obviously Colonel Budahas, who is covered with what seems to be a skin irritation. So it's quite a weird visual. As befits the X-Files. Budahas, actually, the name comes from an old friend of Chris Carter's called Bob Budahas, someone he went to high school with. Apparently, he would pepper a lot of the characters in the show based on people he knew or people that he'd, you know, heard the names of before. So almost all of the guest characters are based on somebody that Chris Carter's had some affiliation with. So I think this is one of the first ones, Budahas.
Wow.
Which nobody believed was a real person either. Everyone was like, that's not a real name.
It's not found very made up.
It does, but it's apparently very true, yeah. So then we go into the credit sequence, which is the first time we've seen the and the first theme tune, actually, the first time we've heard Mark Snow's theme tune in this episode. These credits are amazing, aren't they, really? It almost looked dated then, but it seems to have weirdly stood the test of time, strangely, I think. What do you think?
I think that's why it stood the test of time, because it looked old when we first saw it. Within three or four episodes, you were just used to it looking old.
Yeah, yeah.
By the time you got to the end of it, it's just... Once it becomes iconic, no one cares.
Right, exactly.
You know what I mean? You know, we're not talking like CSI episodes that just look terrible now. If you try and watch any of them, but if you look at the title sequence, and they just look awful. Yeah. Whereas the X-Files, everybody loves it. No one's looking at it going, oh, that looks a bit crap.
No, exactly. Yeah. It's a strange, like... You know, series of images, though, isn't it? Really sums up the paranormal aspect and like the ghost walking down the hallway and the face coming at the screen and all the words that say things like, you know, government, you know, hiding secrets or whatever it says. It's just like, it's really, if it wasn't part of something good, it would be really sort of dodgy and kitsch and weird. But it kind of, it just weirdly works.
Well, if it wasn't part of something good, it would just be pages from, do you remember X Factor magazine?
Oh, yeah, I do. I used to collect them.
Yeah. So did I.
Oh, God. X Factor magazine. Back before the days of the X Factor, the shitty TV show on British television.
Yeah.
No connection to that. This was like an X Files, but yeah, for British people in a magazine talking about people in Ipswich who'd been abducted by aliens. It's as shit as it sounds.
It was terrible.
It was pretty bad. But yeah, it's a great, and a great theme tune, obviously, by Mark Snow as well, which has become iconic, like, you know, the Star Trek theme tune or music by John Williams for various films. I think the X-Files theme tune, everyone knows the don't they? It's just gone into...
Everybody, you don't have to be an X-Files fan. You don't even need to have seen an episode of The X-Files to know that that's what that music is.
Yeah, you know where it's come from, don't you? Yeah.
It takes a pretty special TV show to be able to do that.
That's true, that's true. Even some great shows out there don't have iconic theme tunes that go beyond the show itself. And that. Yeah, X-Files is one of the rare ones to do that. So once the credit sequence is over, we're into the first scene. This actually is set 4 months later when we first see Mulder and Scully again. And they're in a bar, which is not something that they would repeat very often in the show, was it? You didn't really get them having their briefings in a bar very often, would you?
No, there wasn't much of a social thing for a lot of it, was there?
No.
You know, they were friends and they were friendly, but they never went out drinking together.
No, exactly. It's apparently that bar where they filmed was a right dive, but they managed to tart it up to seem a lot more like a swish Washington, you know, bar where lawyers and government officials would go, but apparently it was a shithole.
You just know full well that outside all these hillbillies pissed off that they'd be kicked out of their bar.
Yeah, all these Canadian hillbillies here. But obviously that, as Mulder explains the case to Scully, he's then he encounters Deep Throat, the titular Deep Throat in the men's washroom, who warns him to stay away from the case. The military don't want people looking into this. And obviously we first meet Jerry Hardin there, who I think wasn't in a massive amount of episodes, really, if you look at the whole, you know, X-Files of the room, but he makes such an impression right from the off, doesn't he?
Well, I'd say he looks the part, doesn't he?
Yeah.
And he's just got such a presence on that screen next to Mulder that, yeah, you can't help but take note of everything the guy says.
He's got that. You just know that he's somebody who has secrets and he has, like, information, and he's not a dick with it. You know, he's giving Mulder just what he can and what Mulder needs.
Just enough to force Mulder to push himself on a little bit.
Yeah, exactly. Jerry Hardin was found by Chris Carter after watching The Firm, which was the 1993 film with Tom Cruise, where, I don't know if you've seen that.
I have, a long time ago.
Yeah, I watched it a couple of years ago, actually, and I quite enjoyed it. And it's Jerry Hardin plays one of the big corporate guys in that, and he's, you know, he's quite good in that. You know, it was that point when Chris Carter saw him as like a corporate suited figure hiding things that he was like, this guy does the job, really.
I think he's got the same presence in The Firm, though, hasn't he? This big, just powerful guy that you have to pay attention to.
Right, exactly, yeah. And that works really well. The character, obviously, Deep Throat, was based on the infamous Watergate informer who was known as Deep Throat. And, you know, the Watergate is a big influence on the X-Files and all the President's Men and that kind of thing from the 70s. That 70s, and I think we've talked about this in the previous episodes, but that's an element of the death of the American dream and American paranoia and distrusting government and surveillance. And Deep Throat was a big part of that mythology of Watergate. So to use that name was, again, linking back to that inspiration, wasn't it?
Yeah, absolutely. And it was I think the X-Files as a whole, though, wasn't it? It was an extension of that kind of 60s and 70s. All those 60s and 70s films are kind of played off the paranoia of communism.
Yeah, exactly.
And it absolutely was a 90s extension of that.
Yeah.
And yeah, to have a character called Deep Throat in it, it was maybe the most blatant of connections to things like that.
Yeah, definitely. It kind of just adds that level of, once now you know Mulder's got somebody within the government that he's trying, you know, in the pilot he said that there are people trying to block his access for information in Congress.
Yeah.
And now to actually have somebody in government who is saying, step away, leave this alone, don't go close to it, just adds that extra element. You know, it's further adding the point that Mulder isn't crazy, that there is something to this that's going on. But then Mulder actually, after this, obviously finds in his apartment that his telephone's seemingly being bugged and someone's watching him from a parked van, but he won't talk to Scully about it. So again, it's adding that extra element of surveillance and paranoia, which is something that the pilot didn't do. The pilot was much more about establishing the idea of the aliens and the, you know, the sense of the dynamic between Mulder and Scully and this whole fear of people just being taken away and from their families and things. This episode is much more about the government corruption side and the conspiracy side, isn't it?
Yeah, absolutely. Like we said earlier, an extension of the pilot, where you have the pilot that, like you say, does the whole this. You know, there are aliens, there are abductions. Here's a guy investigating it. And where, like you say, where he says, you know, people are trying to stop me from finding out about it. Now, as an extension to that, we get, here's the guy that's helping / not quite helping.
Yeah.
And here's the government that's absolutely trying to stop you from finding out what's going on. It's a a lot. It's essentially the second part to the pilot, though, isn't it?
Yeah, this is it. This is what I think, because it's the side of the pilot that they couldn't do in that one episode unless it was going to be like a two-parter, and it wouldn't have fitted with that episode anyway. That episode was just a bit more about, you know, the people involved. This one is more about the overarching.
It changes completely for this one.
Definitely.
As well.
Yeah, definitely. And I think the reason I like it more is because it's more my kind of story for the X-Files. It's more the kind of stories I would enjoy, where it was much more the conspiracy side. But then they get to Idaho, coming and investigating, and they go to see Mrs. Budahas because she's shaken by the loss of her husband, because obviously he disappeared after the incident in the teaser. And they hear a speeding aircraft overhead, which obviously sets the idea that there might be some kind of government project going on in the area, which later, when they meet the other test pilot's wife, Mrs. McLennan, Scully suggests that these pilots might not be abductees or anything, or might be flying the aircraft that Mulder thinks they are, but they might be, you know, washouts from like the Aurora project and all of these secret government projects that were happening. And that's a kind of example, isn't it, of Scully trying to put much more of a, if not scientific, then rational.
Yeah, put a logical, rational spin to Mulder's what could be quite harebrained ideas.
Yeah, yeah, exactly.
She's the one that forces herself to be grounded in reality, doesn't she?
Yeah, and so she's saying, look, it doesn't have to be UFOs. You know, it could just be these really top secret experimental aircraft that these people, Mulder's not having any of it. You know, it's like, no. Come on.
The running theme, though, isn't it, with the X-Files? You hear, like for example, with these, you get the planes, you know, super-duper, hyper-fast planes that no one can see. You don't see them. They don't see them. There's no way of being able to answer whether or not they're secret planes, normal planes, UFOs, whatever. And it's always a running theme with the X-Files, everything being just behind the curtain.
Yeah, exactly. It's that whole thing of they can't quite see the whole picture, which is, again, you know, why they go to try and speak, well, Mulder especially goes to try and speak to someone in the Air Force, Colonel Kissel, and he just blocks him, and they, you know, they don't want to know. They don't want to talk to these people. But then they meet the journalist, Paul Mosinger, who obviously later on turns out to be more than he seems. And he kind of sets them on the path of going to the more fringe side of it, don't they? He puts them on the path of the UFO nuts, as they say, in the area. And it's like, again, because obviously later, as I say, we know that he's up to something, that he's part of the conspiracy. Then it's like interesting how they end up going into finding that through him. It's like, again, it just shows that manipulation, doesn't it?
Yeah, it shows how easily some of them want to be convinced.
Yeah, exactly, yeah. And then when they get to the Flying Saucer Diner, they meet that woman behind the counter who has the picture of the triangular UFO. I really like that scene because, especially when Scully calls Mulder a sucker because he's going to buy the picture off her. I just like that because it just shows, again, how Mulder is willing to go to the extreme people who may be written off by everybody else as crazy or, you know, delusional, but he will put some stock in, you know, these grainy photos and what they're saying.
Yeah, absolutely. He's, you know, willing to believe where no one else is. And I think that's great because, you know, we are willing to believe with him, which makes this such a special show.
Right, exactly. We get drawn in. And this leads to easily my favourite scene of the whole episode. This is the scene I talked about in the primer, which is obviously from the woman, they get the map that leads to the airbase and the secret hole in the chain fence that allows Mulder to get into and see the airbase. And this is where we see the UFOs dancing in the sky, and the Mulder's watching, Scully's asleep in the car, the window shatters. He grabs her and says, Scully, you got to see this. Drags her up to the top of the hill. And then they see these two lights in the sky dancing until they just suddenly shoot off into the air at just impossible speed. And Scully just turns to Mulder and goes, oh my God.
I may have just seen something. You might be right.
Yeah, exactly. Because at first point she's like, oh, maybe it's lasers being shot from the sky, from the ground and stuff like that. But when they just go, disappear into the sky, she just knows that just can't be done, you know? And
yeah.
I think what I like about that is that you very rarely, and again, I mentioned this in the primer, but very rarely does Scully see anything. So when she does see something and she can't, it's irrefutable, it's one of those rare moments, isn't it?
Yeah. It's like you said, it was the running joke with X-Files, wasn't it? She was always a minute too late for the good stuff.
Yeah.
And and like I said, well, you know, when something like that happens and she does get to see it and there's no way she can argue about it, you're like, we've been trying to tell you this.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Chris Carter famously didn't like that scene, though, at all. He didn't like the way it came out. he thought that the effects looked really bad.
He did say, didn't he, some of the worst effects and in the entire show.
Yeah.
And some of them were bad.
Yeah.
That and the one a little later with Mulder on his own was just, like I said, I watched them maybe 3 days ago and you go, wow, that was core. And the bigger, you know, as the years go on, I watch it on an ever bigger TV screen in ever higher fidelity and you go, wow, this is kind of god-awful.
It's a bit dodgy, yeah. Yep. Are you talking about the scene where he encounters the UFO and it flies above him?
Yes.
Well, funnily enough, Chris Carter loved that. he actually reckons that's a great effect for the conditions and the time and the effects they had.
For the conditions and the time, and again, like no budget and early 90s, absolutely, it looked great. But now...
Well, yeah. No, I know what you mean, yeah. But yeah, if you do ever meet him, don't bring that up. Don't say, oh, that effect with more shit.
I've got bigger issues with Chris Carter than that effect if I ever meet him. I want to know what the fuck he was thinking about making Harsh Realm.
Well, yeah. Yeah, basically, yeah. That's a better question. I just think that's just one of the best scenes. And I disagree with him. I think those effects look good because they don't... The whole point is that you don't see much and they could be different kinds of things. And then... The fact they look a little bit shit,
yeah,
is why I like them. And I've mentioned this before. I like the lo-fi element of the X-Files. I like it when it's all just a little bit like edgy and a bit crap because it feels more real to me.
There's definitely something to that, I think. And I think because if you make, and this is where I think this is going to make or break this event season when it comes out in January.
Yeah, yeah.
Because now we've got the budgets and we've got, you and me have got the software to make the effects better than that.
Mm.
Do you know what I mean? So having that kind of, it could ruin the entire feel of the whole show, having that kind of money and that skill and being able to show you absolutely everything.
Yeah, yeah.
Could really break the immersion of every X-Files fan.
I agree. Anyway, we get past this scene. They're obviously then, they're chased away by helicopters, unmarked helicopters, and they're saved by the two teenagers, Emil and Zoe, and they end up in a diner and the teenagers are talking to them about the aircraft and the base and everything like that. And then he shows Emil the picture and he goes, yeah, that's exactly what they look like, what we were chased by. So it's and Scully mocks this then and she says, you know, they're obviously stoned.
Yeah. They're high. Why were that stoned?
Yeah, exactly. Why were that stoned? You were that stoned? And, you know, and then Mulder even brings up, you know, the fact that they're just like UFOs that were supposed to have crashed in Roswell, New Mexico and things like that. And that the airbase is one of the places where supposedly parts of that wreckage were shipped. And this is before we find out that Roswell was a key touchstone in the whole mythology of the X-Files.
Yeah.
So it's, and this is before really, I think Chris Carter had figured it out, but it's just one of those things that, you know, again, Scully won't hold sway with all of that. You know, that's just supposition on Mulder's part. But then they get back to the hotel and Colonel Buddha has reappeared and the wife is beside herself because she reckons it's not him and he's much more, it's like he's lost a bit of himself, isn't it?
Yeah, he's very, not quite zombie, but definitely brainwashed.
Mm.
Isn't he? And you can see it in his face. Yeah, just very robotic.
And then he gets angry, doesn't he, when he's being questioned. It's almost like, I always think that's like he's been programmed to react when people ask him too many questions.
Yep.
And that he can't remember a lot of the things he did and he gets really frustrated because he's confused. But I think part of the conditioning is if people ask you too much, you react, you push them away, you get angry, you know, which is really, it's quite a scary idea, isn't it, that these test pilots flying these UFOs that having their memories wiped and things could be left like that, you know, and it's quite a chilling idea, isn't it?
It is very much so. I think it's something, I've said this to a couple of people in the past when I've tried to convince them to watch X-Files.
Yeah.
It's a weird thing I kind of said. It's the whole show is grounded in all these conspiracies you've heard for years and years and years. And one of them was always things like test pilots that came back like that.
Mm.
But literally zombies. You know, people that just, it had such a bad mental impact on them that they brainwashed themselves by traveling at these high speeds and putting their bodies through these conditions.
Yeah.
And it's something that always kind of, it's one of the reasons I love the X-Files is because everything they say, especially when you get to the mythology episodes, everything they say, you can find something out about that from elsewhere.
Yeah.
You know, it's never, well, obviously some of it is, but it's not just made up for the X-Files. It's stuff that someone else has made up as part of a conspiracy elsewhere.
Or it's something that actually happened and it's been riffed on or it's been extended. And definitely, as I've said before, this episode, the Aurora Project was a rumoured project that definitely existed in the Air Force. And that's what inspired Chris Carter. You know, he says, I remember sitting in my house and hearing sonic booms and having people talk about the Aurora Project in California, in Southern California, and that there were aircraft that the Air Force were not telling us about that were overflying. And this was sort of a nod to that, that they were using a hybrid of scavenged UFO technology. And that idea is... So, yeah, it's a real idea that has been incorporated. And, yeah, like you say, that's what makes it even more terrifying, because there might be real nuggets of truth.
It's stuff we all heard before.
Exactly, yeah. That's why, you know, and this was talked about last week, but it's why putting that thing at the start of the pilot, that these were based on actual documented events, just gives that air of authenticity to it, doesn't it, really? And
yeah. And
that, you know, wasn't carried on throughout the entire series or anything, but that underlying thing is, I think most of the ideas for the episodes came from some nugget of a report or something people heard. So this is a good first example of that, really.
Yeah.
So then they're talking about what could have happened. Mulder thinks that his brain has been rewired, and they're in the car, and Scully's arguing that that can't be done. And then suddenly they get run off the road. And this is where we see the men in black. You can tell that these guys, you know, are just hired extras, but you get the point of the scene, don't you? And I always remember the bit where they punch Mulder. They give him a proper jab to the ribs.
Yep.
They proper strong arm him, don't they? They're quite rough when they're telling him to, you know, give him all the evidence, back off and leave, because you're getting too close to something. It's quite a harsh moment, isn't it?
It's a little darker than you expect a moment like that to be. Like,
yeah.
A lot of the time when you get moments like that in films and TV, it's very much, they just stand there and they intimidate you by just standing there. But to actually get very physical about it, it's something they didn't really quite do with shows back then. And even now, you know, with sci-fi that deals with conspiracy, things like Fringe and that, you don't see that now. So it was very, like you say, for them to get physical, and it actually looked like that dig hurt.
Yeah, that's the thing.
I get the feeling that guy hit him a bit harder than he should have done.
Yeah, because you can almost see the wince on David Duchovny's face, can't you? Oh, God, mate. You know, it's just... Yeah, it's what ends up, you know, they obviously... They're talking. Scully's ready to get out of there after that, and then Mulder explains that, you know, he was approached by someone in Washington, that this means that there is definitely something they're trying to cover up, and she just wants to get out of there. You know, she thinks whatever's going on, Colonel Bluderhaus was why we came here. He's back. He's safe. Let's leave. Let's get out of here.
Yeah.
But then he does the classic Mulder thing and just doesn't tell her what he's doing, or doesn't, like, and just goes. And he's like, I'm off, see you later. And she's like, Mulder, where are you going? If I had a pound for the amount of times in this show that he just buggers off and then occasionally leaves her like a note or gives her a call, but most of the time he's just gone and she has to try and figure it out for herself. Poor woman. But then it's nice that it's actually the teenagers who lead him to the hole in the fence, and then that he gets back into the base, you know, through very underground means, you know, isn't it, really?
Yeah.
It's quite a cool way of doing it.
Yeah, and again, to bring the stoned teenagers back, again, it just kind of solidifies that. Are they stoned, or did they actually see that?
Right.
Is he just still playing into their delusion as well as his own? It was quite an interesting way of bringing that round, I thought.
Exactly, yeah. And it's good storytelling as well, in that, you know, everything pays off in this episode. All the little plot connections actually do connect up, and they do pay off. So having the teenagers, you know, respond to that photo, having the photo is what Mulder can show them. It all just connects up nicely. So it gives the episode a real sense of, you know, all these people are working towards the same thing. So it's good. And then when he gets through to the Air Force base, and that's the scene we mentioned earlier with the dazzling UFO, when he runs away.
Yeah.
And apparently they had to shoot this scene like just before the sun was coming up, and you can see how there are two different kinds of shots that the production designer had to try and cloak the shot so you couldn't see the sun coming up. And at the moment where Mulder is laid onto the gurney, you can kind of see that the sky's changing a bit.
Yeah.
So they had to be very sort of creative with that, because they didn't have much time. But I don't know if it's a particularly convincing moment, really. Because it's the classic thing. Why doesn't he just run to the side?
Yeah.
As well, when he sees that UFO and then he's legging it from the vans, why doesn't he just run towards the grass? Why do people always run straight ahead? It's like, have you ever seen Prometheus?
Yes.
Do you remember, you know, the end of Prometheus where Charlize Theron just decides to run forward when there's a big thing falling face down on her?
Yeah.
Run to your left.
Hook her left, you'll be all right.
Yeah, what are you doing? But yeah, I think, I do like that image of the UFO, though. I think it's quite a cool visual.
It's interesting because obviously they've made it triangular, and they haven't they? Like the picture.
Yeah.
And again, that picture, you can Google that and you'll find it in a million different places.
Exactly, yeah.
It's one of these, you know, air quotes, documented UFO sightings that you can pick up from absolutely anywhere. So to do that, and again, to kind of ground it in something that we've all heard of before, I think is genius storytelling.
I agree. What I like as well is that they kept throughout the mythology, and we'll see this as more we go on in the show, but that UFO that we see in episode 2 is the same UFO that we see in like episodes, you know, 20 of season 9, right? It's the same design. They don't mess about with that. They have the occasional different kind of UFO, but in terms of the mythology and the idea of the, when we discover like the deeper levels of it, that it's still the same UFO. And it's, you know, they keep that mostly the same kind of design throughout the whole show. I think that's quite good that they, you know, right from the very beginning, they kind of keep that continuity almost with the alien technology. I think I always think of that when I watch Deep Throat.
It's interesting you say that, because I'd never spotted that before. I clearly have no attention to detail whatsoever. But when I watched Deep Throat in preparation for this, I'd literally had maybe 3 days before got to the episode with the alien rebels,
right,
where they hit the bridge and start setting people on fire.
Yeah,
and it's the exact same ship that turns up to do that.
It is, isn't it? Like that's season 5. Yeah,
it is. And genuinely, it wasn't until I watched Deep Throat 2 days later I went, oh crap, how have I not spotted this before?
Yeah, it's the same ship. And also, yeah, people wouldn't know it's also the same ship you see in Max in season 4. You see it in like a field, like a plane crash site. And you also see it when Mulder's having the visions at the start of season 7 in The Sixth Extinction, when the world is being bombed by alien ships, and they're the same triangular ships. And I just always think, well, this is great, because, you know, if you're going to have a mythology like this and you're going to have a continuing story, if you keep the details, people will notice the details in the end. You know, yeah. People will do what you did and then connect up and go, oh, that's great, because it's clearly that they've had some idea of keeping the same. And I love that, even when they didn't know where they were heading completely, I love the fact they kept that same design.
Absolutely. It's not something that you can say about every TV show.
No,
it is
definitely not.
You know, nowadays, you know, yeah, audiences are a bit more attuned to it, and we go, hold on a minute, you fucked that up.
Yeah,
but yeah, mid-90s, no one, that's unfair, but a lot of TV shows just didn't bother. And again, this is why I love The X-Files. I've been watching the damn show for 15 years and I spotted this 2 days ago.
That's a really nice, you know, fact. So obviously then Mulder's captured by the Air Force base and he's injected. And then we see him going through, you know, a building where it's all creepy, you know, twiddling little music, like that kind of thing. And then he's seeing all the big UFO hangars and things in big dark sheet, in big white sheets and everything. And it's quite a trippy sequence, isn't it? Obviously, it's something he's destined not to remember, because he's then, you know, his memory's wiped. But that's quite an interesting scene, isn't it, where he's being wheeled through.
It's very interesting, because it plays like, trippy is probably the right word for it, though, isn't it? It plays like any memory wipe sequence in any film or that before. It's always very trippy and colourful, and as if it requires LSD to clear everyone's memory.
Yeah, yeah, exactly,
and,
yeah.
And it definitely plays to that. And again, it adds to that, we all know that this is how it happened, so we all know he's having his memory wiped as we watch it happen.
It's that whole thing as well that was talked about in previous episodes, that we always see a little bit more than Mulder and Scully often do. You know, there's always that extra little element that the audience get to see. So in this case, you know, Mulder doesn't remember all these UFOs that have helped in this hangar, but we've seen that. So we know, it's almost like we're in on him. We're in on his journey. So we know that he's right, and we know that there is something to this, but he and Scully, or especially Scully, don't always see it. And I think I like that, because it allows the audience to stay a little bit in tune with what his journey.
We're always a little bit ahead of him.
Yeah.
We know he's going to find something. We know there's something there. But it's one of the few times where I can stand the TV show for making me feel hopeless. Because, man, I just want to help. You know what I mean?
Definitely, yeah. And it's you just think, oh, no, because he's got so close, you know. And then obviously, you know, Scully has a little bit of a tussle with Paul Mosinger when he turns out to be, you know, a bit of a very sort of almost cliched 90s bad guy. Really, he's a bit shit.
He's a bit crap.
He's a bit crap.
He does turn into this, very out of every single straight-to-video movie.
Yeah, bad guy. He's a bit of a Barry Bostwick, isn't he? You know, he's a bit... But yeah, he's... She gets one over him, obviously, and then Mulder gets released because she threatens to go to the papers. Now, I think that's a very early X-Files idea. I don't think they would do that again. They didn't really do that very often. I don't think that would wash. I think they'd just go, well, fuck that. We'll just write what we want in the papers. You know, that you're not going to get to us that way. So I think they they could have pulled that a few times, but I don't think they did that again, because it's just a bit too easy, isn't it?
It's a bit of a rubbish get out of jail free.
Yeah.
And again, you know, the new season's going to be interesting. Well, if you don't do this, I'm going to make an angry post on Twitter.
Yeah. But well, this is it. I think they will use those social media things in the new series. So
I think they have to ignore them for the kind of stories that they're going to be playing, especially conspiracy-based ones.
Yeah.
I think to ignore them would be daft.
Definitely. I don't think it would work, would it, really? But yeah, so Mulder gets back. He can't remember anything that's gone on, really. He's got a very vague memory of what's happening. And then they go back to see Mrs. Budahas, because Mulder's just like, he's ragged, you know, he looks like he's not slept, obviously. And he just wants some proof that something's happened. And she just shuts the door on him, because I always took that she's been warned in the intervening. Those men in black who ran him off the road have probably been around the house and said, if you speak to them again, you're both dead, basically.
Yeah. Oh, absolutely. Yeah, I think I took the same thing from that.
Yeah. And then Scully's just at the end of a tether now. She's like, we don't know anything. We're going, right? And he's like, all right, then. He's toddles off after her. she's had enough by that point. She's like, fuck this. You know, it's too much.
I've had enough. Let's just go home, please.
Just please go home. But then obviously we see her just before the scene with Deepthroat, we see her typing up her field report, and she's again saying, she's putting down Mulder's theories, but she's saying that the case is closed. But she does look at the UFO, and it's she's still at that point where she's doing what the FBI are telling her to do and write her reports and, you know, make the point that Mulder hasn't actually proven anything. But at the same time, she saw enough in this case to know that there was something more to it.
Absolutely. And we're back to the same thing. Because it's so early on in the show, it's setting up things, isn't it? So many times we'd see her at the end of an episode typing up her bits and going, oh, I might be wrong, though.
Yeah, exactly. You
know, that look on her face going, maybe he's right, but I can't write that he might be right, because no one will take me seriously either.
Yeah.
You know, she knows she has to be the voice of reason and the voice of logic. And there are episodes, not so much this one where it does end, but there are episodes further on where she's clearly torn and wants to say something, being like, I can't.
Yeah.
Because it's so early on in the show, it sets up so many little things that you see further on.
Definitely. And then you obviously get the final scene, which you mentioned earlier, but this is the scene where Mulder meets Deep Throat, and he sees that there is more to, you know, he's starting to maybe doubt after his memory had, he says, you know, my memory's gone, they erased it. And he's not sure maybe what happened to him. And then Deep Throat comes in and says, it's true. What you saw, he's there. Well, he doesn't confirm or deny it, but he gives Mulder enough to say, when he says, why are those who believe in the existence of alien life not dissuaded by all the evidence? And Mulder says, because it's not very dissuasive. And he goes, exactly. And that's great, isn't it? That just sets up his quest.
It does. It sets up his quest, our quest. We all just want to get involved and go, come on.
Yeah, exactly, yeah.
And it is such a great scene, such a great, you know, final couple of lines for the episode.
Yeah, definitely. It really is. And it does that really well. And it's just a great way to end the episode, with those lines, you know, they're here, aren't they?
Mr. Mulder, they've been here for a very long time.
Exactly, it's brilliant. And then his face, it's just great. It's just one of the best ways. And I can totally see why that's your favourite moment of the series. I think Chris Carter loved it as well.
I think because we all pulled, every single person that loves The X-Files all pulled that exact same face that Mulder did.
Yeah.
I think it's just such a powerful moment in the whole show. Just go, oh shit.
Yeah, oh my God.
And it's such a cock tease of an ending as well, because the next Poxy episode is a monster episode.
That's true. And you're like, oh my God. But yeah, that's true. And you just want more, don't you? You want more from this mythology, more from this conspiracy. But that's it. That's the end of Deep Throat. That's the end of the episode. So it's a great and extra beginning for the show, really. That just adds a lot more to it. Moving on to our next part of the episode, which is where I ask my guest, do you believe in? And we're going to talk about a specific piece of paranormality for each episode where we ask this. So in this case, Andrew, do you believe in UFOs?
I don't know. I don't know. I very much fall into that category of people that shows like The X-Files, and I mentioned them earlier, like shows like Fringe, always managed to write the logic in such a way that I should be believing in it.
Mm.
But at the same time, I go, well, I haven't seen one myself. Until I see it myself, should I really be believing in this? I think to a point I have to say yes, but I really have to asterisk that and say, but I'm waiting to see one of my own very own.
I think that's a fair thing to say about most paranormality, really, isn't it? And, you know, mystery, in that unless you've seen something yourself, it's hard to know if you believe or not.
Yeah, I mean, there are certain things I like to believe, and I just, UFOs, you know, there's a lot of evidence for them. I don't believe that the government, that any government puts up that many weather balloons.
Yeah.
But at the same time, maybe they do. I don't know the government or weather, so I want to believe. I do.
Yeah,
I'm not sure I can.
I think, though, it's like there was a certain point, though, where I think UFOs, and this is even something to an extent that is included in the X-Files in later seasons, but in the show, but there seemed to be a certain point of history where there were much more sightings of UFOs and there were more reports of this kind of stuff. In this day and age, it doesn't seem to be as prevalent, does it? Or it doesn't seem to be as, I don't know. When I was growing up in the 90s, it seemed to be a lot more that people were seeing UFOs, or there were reports of UFOs. It doesn't seem to happen as much anymore, and it makes me wonder.
It doesn't happen as much anymore, but I tend to think, and this is the logical side of me that goes, I'm not sure I want to believe. I very much believe that it's self-perpetuating. The X-Files made people believe, so maybe made people a bit more paranoid about stuff like this.
Possibly,
and,
yeah.
And they take any dodgy shaped cloud as sign of a UFO. And of course, eventually, the X-Files had to end. And the only people that were left watching the X-Files were people like you and me who want to watch it again and again and again. After that, you know, and let's be honest, a lot of people are a bit stupid.
Really? Well, in this world? I'm quite stunned at that. But no, it's true. It's something that, you know, there are lots of reports about UFOs. There's some really famous ones. You know, one of the most famous ones for people based in it, obviously this is a British-based X-Files podcast, but is things like the Rendlesham Air Base incident, you know, in Suffolk, and all these, you know, the things we would read in the X-Factor, like we talked about earlier. But there's never any, you know, conclusive proof. There was also the guy, do you remember the guy called Nick Pope, who was known as the British Fox Mulder, because he used to investigate X-Files, UFO sightings and things like that for the MOD. I always remember him being in those periodicals and things like that. I don't know if you remember that guy.
I do. I haven't heard the name in a long, long time. Again, I think there's a reason for that.
Exactly, yeah. I just think people, I tend to think maybe people have got too much else to worry about these days with modern, you know, worries about, and the kind of things I think the new series will tap into about worries about surveillance and technology and terrorism, and, you know, it just feels like worrying about UFOs was very 90s.
Yes. It really was. But again, like you say that, like towards the end of the X-Files, we had that, didn't we? Like with the movie, we had started off with domestic terrorism in a way.
That's true.
You know, and it did continue as a theme. And obviously that ran into the 2000s. So,
yeah.
You know, and that was definitely a 2000s kind of worry.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. Because the X-Files finished just after 9/11, didn't it? It was like 2002.
Yeah.
So they never really properly tapped into all that.
I think we will definitely get that with this news.
I agree. Absolutely. I think we will. Quickly as well, there is, did you spot the celebrity in the episode? And this is something we're going to try and track each episode, that famous people or people we recognise from TV or movies crop up. So who was the celebrity in this one?
I mean, I did spot the celebrity, but let's be fair, he's probably one of the most famous celebrity guest spots for X-Files.
That's true, actually, yeah.
So, you know, Seth Green, everyone knows Seth Green has done an episode of the X-Files.
Yeah.
It is impressive that he's so early on, though.
Yeah, I was going to say, yeah, because he's right there at the very beginning that this is before Buffy, obviously, and before he was known for all the other things he's done. So it's, yeah, and he's great in this, isn't he? He's like proper, he's the stoner teenager, obviously.
Oh, yeah.
The stoner teenager.
He does look like a stoner. He still looks like a stoner to me.
It's true.
I think he was cast perfectly in this, I think.
No, I agree. So yeah, keep an eye out for Seth Green, and we will keep doing Celebrity Spot in each episode where we see someone we might recognise in the future. So for the last part of the episode, I'm going to move on. We're going to do the X quiz, which is where I grill you, Andrew, on 5 questions from Deep Throat and a quote from the episode.
I've been dreading.
Yeah, everyone dreads the quizzes. You'll be fine. You'll be fine. So are you ready?
Yep, go on then.
Okay, let's do this. Question 1. Name the Air Force base Mulder sees the UFO, and for an extra point, the base it was inspired by.
Crap. No.
Crap Air Force base.
That's about as good as answer. Oh, Jesus. No, I've got Andrews Air Force Base stuck in my head. It's not that.
You're close. They named an Air Force Base after you, yeah. It's Ellen's Air Force Base.
Oh, damn it.
And Ellen's was the name of a girlfriend, Chris Carter. Again, with the names thing, Ellen's was an old girlfriend of his. So he used the name. It's actually Nellis Air Force Base as well, but is the real one. And so, again, that's another little, play on the word, really.
Yeah.
Okay, question two. The house used for exterior shots of the Budahas home was later a main feature in what related 90s TV series?
Related 90s TV series? Mm,
that's a bit of a clue in there.
The only related one had to be Millennium.
Yes, but what house was it?
Was it Lance Henriksen's house?
It was the Yellow House that Frank Black...
The Yellow House, that's the one, yeah.
The big Yellow House. It was the same house that then was used for Frank Black's Yellow House in Millennium. Yeah. Okay, question three. Which of Mr. McLennan's hobbies was the idea of his brother Hank? So his wife at one point says, oh, something was the idea of his brother Hank. And this is the other guy who was the Air Force pilot that we briefly see.
Oh, man. No. No.
Okay, I'll take
it. Well, this is going disastrously.
It's tied. You've got one right, as you know. Fly fishing.
Yeah.
And because he's there using he's putting the little thing on the string.
That's awful. I was going to say fish, and I was like, it couldn't have been that.
Oh, well, you should have done. Go with your gut. You might get this one, though. Which film featured Jerry Hardin and was the main reason Chris Carter cast him as Deep Throat?
Well, we've already talked about it, haven't we? It's The Firm.
We have, The Firm. You see, I'm going to layer a few questions into the show, if I can, to make it easier.
Yeah.
So, yeah, The Firm. Well done. Question five. What was the name of the bass director who tells Mulder and Scully to get the hell out of my yard?
Oh, damn it.
We did mention this briefly earlier.
Yeah. Colonel. No, it's gone. We did mention it. It's gone.
Colonel Kissel.
That's the one. Yeah.
Yeah. Never mind. That's
wow.
That's not bad. Finally, for the quote, for a point, which character said the following quote and in what scene was it? Did we tell him about the landmines and junk?
Oh, that was Seth Green when he shows Mulder the hole in the fence.
Yes, well done. Fairly easy quote, really, but...
Yeah, it was. makes me sound much cleverer than I am, but...
Yeah, you got it, though. Fair play. So, yeah, that's 3 out of 6. That's not bad. That's not bad.
Well, I'm running at 500. That's not too bad at all.
Yeah. All right, well done. That was the... you survived the X quiz. Okay, that's all from the XCast this week. This has been Deep Throat, so hopefully you've enjoyed our discussion about the episode and you've got a few nuggets of information from it. Big thanks, Andrew, for coming on the show.
Thank you for having me.
It's been a pleasure. Where can we find you online?
I am very easy to find online. I just mainly spend my time on Twitter getting very, very angry. I'm at Brooke411. Like I say, I get angry and swear a lot, and that pretty much has to be my entire persona online.
You're often a guest and you write for Foul Critics, don't you, the film podcast?
I do. I am very lucky that Owen puts up with me getting angry and swearing on his podcast as well. I go onto their podcast every few weeks and they let me rant about the latest films, and they have me do a lot of writing for them as well. So, yeah, I write a lot about their films for them as well.
I occasionally guest on Foul Critics as well. It's a great little podcast. So definitely check it out and read Andrew's really good reviews. He's always ready to give films that are crap a good slagging off. Which is always fun to read.
Thank you, I appreciate that.
No, it's true. As ever, you can find the XCast on Twitter at @X_cast, and we're on Facebook at the XCast, and you can email us at thexfcast@gmail.com. Please do give us some feedback. It's still early days for the show, but if you can think of any ways to improve it or anything else we could do, or you want to just tell us how great we are, do that. Please do. Let us know. Get in touch. And we're also on Acast. Please do look those guys up. Those are the guys who are good enough to host us. And, of course, we're on iTunes. So if you want to pop on there and give us a 5-star review, that would help us in a big way, because then we'll get known a lot more amongst all the podcasts out there. So, thanks a lot, Andrew.
Anytime.
This has been the XCast. And remember, trust no one. The XCast and X-Files podcast was created by Tony Black and is produced and hosted by Carl Sweeney, Sarah Blair and Kurt North.
You can find the podcast on Twitter at @X_cast, on Facebook by typing in the XCast, and in our group, X-Files Basement, the XCast podcast fan group, and on Instagram, at the XCast pod.
Don't forget, you can support the show by becoming a member on Patreon. Our patrons get early access to episodes, behind-the-scenes chats with our hosts and a thriving community of X-Files, and other premium interviews and specials. To find out more and subscribe, you can go to patreon.com/thexcast. That's patreon.com/thexcast.
We are also part of the We Made This podcast network, full of popular culture shows, including our Millennium series, The Time Is Now. You can find all of our shows at our website, wemadethispod.com, or via Twitter at @wemadethispod.
Thanks for listening, and keep watching the skies.